It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Prison overcrowding is increasingly finding its way to elections all across the country, and Wisconsin is no exception. Nearly everybody agrees that there are too many prisoners and not enough space in the state's prisons, but not everybody agrees on what to do about it, except the Democratic gubernatorial candidates. They all agree that the population should be cut and that people should be given drug treatment. Governor Walker and other state Republicans don't really agree with that. What does prison reform look like to you? Should opioid users be sentenced to prison rather than drug rehab? 800-642-1234 is the number for you to call. Ideas at WPR.org is the email for you to write in, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Cecily Klingel is an associate professor of law at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and a faculty associate at the UW Law School's Frank L. Remington Center. Among other things, she is an expert on sentencing and correctional policy. Cecily, welcome to the program.
Hello.
And it's Cecilia. I'm just getting a note on this. It's Cecilia, okay. And I'm so sorry that I said your name wrong. So
no
Cecilia
worries.
Klingel.
Yes.
Okay. So first off, how big of an issue do you see prison reform from Wisconsin this season, this election season?
Well, prison reform, as you noted, is a hot topic around the country, and it's certainly no less so here, particularly since after a short period with a fairly stable population, our prison population is once again on the rise.
And how many, has this gone up just recently with the opioid crisis? Has this been something that has been fairly consistent?
So across the United States, prison populations skyrocketed throughout the 1990s and early 2000s, and then began, I would say, just after the new millennium to, again, this mimics national trends, began to stabilize and in some places even slightly reduce for a few years, and now Wisconsin is among a number of states that are again beginning to slowly creep up again at a lower rate, certainly, than we saw in the 1990s and 2000s, but to historic highs.
So how bad is this overcrowding?
So overcrowding is a separate issue, I would say, from how many people we have. We have certainly institutions in the state that are operating above capacity, but that is not, unfortunately, atypical for prisons across the United States. Mm-hmm. And having built a substantial number of prisons during the prison boom, our state is better positioned than many others in terms of overcrowding. That said, again, we are now, with a growing population, going to hit a point where decisions have to be made either to create new bed spaces for inmates or to reduce the population size.
Democratic candidates for governor recently shared their views with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Many, if not all of them, called for cutting the state's inmate population in half. Before we dig into that, I want to ask, how realistic a goal is that?
Well, I would say it would depend on whether across what time span mm-hmm. you're talking mm-hmm. and the methods by which you're going to do that. There are really two ways to change the size of your prison population. You can reduce the number of people coming in through the front door, and then you can change the length of time they're staying. Those are really the only two ways to change the size of a prison population, and there are lots of mechanisms for affecting either of those aspects of the population size, some of which are more politically palatable than others.
We are talking to Cecilia Klingel from UW Law School about making prisons smaller or making the populations in prisons smaller, which all the Democratic candidates for governor want to do. So reducing the people who come in the door, I want to explore that for a moment. First of all, what are most people coming to prison for? Is it drug related? Is it violent crime related? Is it hard to separate the two? Talk to me about that.
Sure. So I think that there is a popular myth that many, many individuals, maybe the majority of individuals in our prisons, are there for drug-related offenses. While it is certainly true that a number of people who are incarcerated have drug-related crimes of conviction for which they're serving sentences, mm-hmm. if we look at only the most serious crime for which a person has been sentenced, only about 11% of the Wisconsin prison population has as their most serious crime of conviction mm-hmm. a drug offense. If you look at all drug offenses and offenders, we're talking just over a quarter of the population. That said, there are even more people in prison who have substance abuse problems. Mm-hmm. That's the majority of individuals behind bars that may have been fueling other kinds of crime that weren't drug crime that got people behind bars.
So one of the things that Democratic candidates have been talking about is treatment, getting people who may have been caught with drugs or who may have committed a crime because it's fueled by trying to get money for drugs or because they were high or whatever.
Right.
So a lot of what they're talking about is treatment. Do you think, first of all, let's look at the pure science of this. Do you think that the treatment works to keep people out of prison?
So that's a really important question and also, of course, a complicated one. It depends on what kind of treatment you're talking about and what kind of substance abuse needs people have. There isn't one magic treatment program that will work for every single person. Mm-hmm. For most people with entrenched, serious substance abuse problems, more than one round of treatment is necessary to really help them lead a clean and sober life in the long term. And addiction specialists are well aware of that. They know that relapse is a part of recovery for most individuals. The criminal justice system is slowly catching up with the science of addiction. Mm. But we have been slow to be patient with that process. For obvious reasons, we want to keep the public safe. We want to hold people accountable for their behavior. At the same time, if we really want to spend our treatment dollars wisely and effectively and divert people from the prison system into more effective medical models of managing their behavior, then I think we need to make sure that our community-based treatment programs work with people where they're at. And follow the kinds of models that substance abuse experts would say are likely to give us the results we're seeking.
Okay, so that leads me to our community-based treatment programs. Mm-hmm. Are they well-funded, and do they do the job that we want them to do in this case?
So my knowledge of the specifics of the treatment programs available is limited. I want to make a disclaimer on mm-hmm. that. But the reality is that we don't, as a state, compared to some others, invest as heavily in community-based treatment for lots of different things, whether it's mental illness or substance abuse, as some other states. Minnesota is usually the state to which we are most frequently compared. Their community-based infrastructure for providing treatment for people is more robust. That may explain some of the fact that their prison population is substantially lower than ours, even while their other demographics and crime rates are very, very similar.
That perennial comparison with Minnesota. Mm-hmm. This is sort of the twins.
Our neighbors.
That's really interesting. So I want to talk about the prison population here. How much money is put into treatment and how much money is put into prisons? I mean, the implication from the Democratic candidates is we'll actually save money if we just put people into treatment. Is that true?
That is probably true if we were to do treatment right. The reality is that any kind of programming and intervention that's community-based is far less costly than any program that's provided behind bars. And the reason for that, when people hear about the cost of housing a prisoner for a year, usually they're struck by how it's astronomical and it's impossible that it would cost so much money to incarcerate someone. The reality is that most of that cost isn't for someone's food and clothes. It is instead for the cost of overhead. It's the staff time, the staff overtime. It's all the security features of a prison that cost so much money. So when you provide treatment in a non-secure correctional setting, then you end up saving a lot of money. What is a challenge is getting the state, any state, to front the money to create a community infrastructure that lets us provide really high quality treatment to people in the community and wait for the cost savings to materialize, mm-hmm. and then use the savings from prison to actually continue to build the strength of our community programs. A number of states have participated across the country. Wisconsin has on and off in the Justice Reinvestment Initiative, a private-public partnership that's taken place across the country in the last decade. And its whole idea was that we would save money by investing in community programs. We'd save money on corrections. We'd invest it more in the community. And what we often see...
We will get to this after the break. We're talking to Cecilia Klingel, a law professor, about prison populations and whether we should reduce them. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Wisconsin's prisons are overcrowded. Governor Walker and the legislature are trying to figure out how to address that. They're considering building another prison. But Democratic gubernatorial candidates say the money would be better spent on drug treatment for nonviolent offenders. Cecilia Klingel is helping us suss this out. She is a professor at UW Law School, and she specializes in prison reform. Is it important to you that Wisconsin be tough on crime? What actually does tough on crime mean? Do you think that we should open up more treatment centers and treat people with mental health issues as well as drug issues? And Cecilia, we left it a minute ago talking about treatment centers not quite getting enough money. We were talking about drug treatment centers. Let's talk about mental health. Kenneth from Janesville actually called and said, we need to treat mental illness first before considering prison reform because America treats mental health issues by incarcerating people. What do you say to that?
Certainly, the treatment of the mentally ill is a major issue in the criminal justice system. I want to make sure I start with a disclaimer that most people who suffer from mental illness do not commit crimes. That's a really important thing to remember.
Right.
But among those who do, a disproportionate number suffer from some form of mental illness, sometimes connected to their criminal behavior and sometimes not. We certainly have a problem, just as we have a problem with the treatment infrastructure for substance abuse in this country, we have one with respect to community-based mental health treatment as well. And one of the big national challenges right now is finding providers. So community-based programs are having trouble recruiting appropriately trained psychiatrists and psychologists and social workers and nurses, and that problem is magnified behind bars. We have a very hard time getting an appropriate number of qualified people to treat the serious mental health needs of people who are incarcerated. And so working on building that community-based infrastructure and expanding it would go a long way toward making it feasible to significantly reduce the size of our prison population. When I was droning on before the break, the point I was actually trying to make was that what is important is to make a commitment to taking any money we save by sending less people to prison and actually investing it in our community treatment programs, because so often that money, those savings, end up getting diverted to other causes.
So that takes political will, and it's kind of like, yes, you say that, and then it goes through the grinder of the legislature, and it comes out looking like something different. Are there people who want that outcome, who are there to shepherd that process?
I definitely think that this is an important moment in our state where I hear on a daily basis from a wide group of people of very different political persuasions who say what we are doing right now doesn't make sense. We don't need to have a prison population that is literally more than three times larger than our state's prison population in 1990. That we've been punishing for the last few decades at a level that doesn't match our state's historical norms and isn't explained fully by changes in human behavior, and that we need to do something better. So I do think that there is a will to get creative. It's in the details that people tend to disagree.
So for me, the issue of prison reform doesn't seem to be a gray area. People either feel strongly one way or another. And for me, it comes down to this: retribution versus rehabilitation. And what you're talking to me about in terms of treatment centers is rehabilitation. What people like Brad Schimmel, Attorney General Brad Schimmel, are talking about is retribution. We need to punish people. How do you get beyond that argument?
Well, I think part of it is recognizing that sentencing and the criminal justice system is designed to do both. It has always historically been concerned with two sometimes competing, sometimes not, goals, and that's holding people accountable for things that they have done morally wrong, that we want to tell them is wrong. We want to send messages to victims, and we want to have a sense of justice, that there are consequences to criminal behavior, and also practical considerations. We don't want people to do this again. If they have needs that the state can help them meet reasonably, then we want to help them to rehabilitate. And we want to do it as much for them, which is humanitarian, as for us, which is much more pragmatic. We want to deter them from engaging in the behavior again. And sentencing is always going to be a mix of those things. So reform is often not about abandoning any goal, rehabilitation or punishment or any other, but about thinking about the scale on which we do these things. Our sentences have gotten longer and longer and longer over time, and it's kind of crept up on us in ways that mean we don't usually even notice how much. In some cases, the maximum penalty for certain classes of felonies in Wisconsin has tripled over less than one lifespan.
And is this because judges are doing this, or because we have mandatory sentencing laws, or the truth in sentencing law? I don't understand why.
We don't actually have a lot of mandatory minimum sentences compared to other states, which I think is a strength. Our state has traditionally valued judicial discretion and has let judges make case-specific determinations. Why sentences are long is a complicated interplay between the judiciary and the legislature. So the legislature has raised maximum penalties for most offenses over time, sometimes dramatically, and judges will often take their cue for where to sentence from by looking at the range of punishment available to them. So if you raise a maximum penalty from 20 years to 40 years, it doesn't mean judges are suddenly going to double the punishment they impose, but they may raise the penalties that they impose. Their anchor changes. And over time, that changes the behavior of everyone in the system, not just judges, but also prosecutors and defense attorneys as well.
We are talking about prison reform, the possibility of perhaps letting people out of prison who are non-violent drug offenders and getting them into treatment, or building another prison. These are pretty much our alternatives right now. 800-642-1234 is the number that you can call to weigh in on this. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Scott from Whitewater has a really interesting question that I think will get us into the next section of our discussion here. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you. My question for the professor is the prison population grown equally across the racial demographic? And secondly, has it increased along with an increase of private prison political lobbying and dollars spent on politicians by the private prison industry? And I can take my answer off the air.
Thank you very much, Scott. I appreciate that. So let's get race first, and then we can tackle private prisons. What is the correlation between the number of people in prison and their race?
Well, so good news is, of course, always comparative. So let me start with the bad news, which is that Wisconsin has one of the worst rates of racial disparity between blacks and whites of any state in the nation. Although African Americans make up only just shy of 7% of our population, they make up well over 40% of our prison population. And the majority of those individuals are coming from Milwaukee County, so it's very geographically concentrated, the kind of force of the criminal justice system. So those are not good numbers. That's not good news. What is a little reassuring, at least, is that if you look at the trajectory, the patterns of disparity between 2000 and 2016, what you see is that the gap widened, and widening is a good thing in this context. So the rate of black incarceration actually, as a percentage of the prison population, went down between 2000 and 2014 by about almost 15%. That said, beginning in 2015, it came up a tiny bit, about 1%. And so we still have a gap that's far too large when it comes to disparities between blacks and whites that isn't, and this is important to notice, that isn't explained by behavior alone. But we have made strides in terms of reducing disparities. And actually, if you just pull out women, we've actually decreased female disparities even more significantly than we have with our men.
So the racial population is mostly, the black population in prisons is mostly coming from Milwaukee. Is this a policing issue?
It's probably a system issue. So
You said that with such a sigh in your voice, like,
it's so hard. I hear regularly from people throughout the criminal justice system, particularly in Milwaukee County, and there is such goodwill and such a desire to try to figure out what are we doing wrong and how can we improve. And again, I do think we've seen some improvements, but they're not enough and they're not fast enough for anyone's satisfaction, I don't think. And part of the problem is that when we look at criminal justice reform, we have to remember that the criminal justice system doesn't operate in isolation. I have a lot of compassion for corrections because they do not control who comes to them, how long they stay, or what their budget is to treat people. So they're on the receiving end of a lot of failures in our social service systems.
Actually,
Go ahead.
Actually, we have a caller that speaks to that. I would like to go to her. Lori from Hales Corners. Welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you, and welcome to our station. I am interested. There's so much been in the paper about trauma. There was another article in the paper about the number of hours worked by one of the prison guards, and he was earning more than our governor. The quality and quantity of workers, and not just the guards, but anybody that has to interact under those difficult circumstances, the whole atmosphere sounds traumatizing to everybody there. And I think it's a big factor.
Lori, thank you for that. Cecilia, you want to go on and address that?
Sure. One of the real challenges facing state corrections is a shortage in available workers. So the good news is our state has a low unemployment rate that makes most of us happy. However, because corrections is a very, very difficult environment in which to work and the pay is not stellar, it is very difficult to find correctional workers, particularly in some regions of our state.
So right now you have articulated that we need psychiatrists and we need correctional workers. What else do we need?
Yeah, well, we do, or we need to find a better way than prisons to manage at least some portion of the people who are behind bars.
So prison reform would actually also help in terms of we don't have enough qualified workers, and the workers that are there are pretty traumatized. So if we cut populations in half and send them to treatment centers, that might help them. However, when they get to treatment centers, there aren't enough psychiatrists to help them.
Well, and treatment centers are the answer for some individuals.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to be the answer for everyone. I think what we need is greater imagination around thinking about how you hold people accountable for offenses without removing them from the community, except when that is absolutely necessary. And when it's necessary to remove people from the community, we need to think about how long we need to do that for.
We are talking about prison reform. Should we build new prisons here in Wisconsin, as the legislature has authorized a study to do? Or should we let people out of prisons and maybe reform how we punish people? 800-642-1234. You can email us at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We've got Mike from Milwaukee. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, I want to make just one quick statement before I get into what I call for. The three of the last four presidents, and I'm sure Trump didn't use any drugs in his younger years, but have admitted to using drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But still the stigma is there for people who have used drugs regardless of whether it's a small amount of pot or whatever. And when it goes to the more intense drugs, there's no empathy for that. And so funding for treatment programs and stuff is very underfunded. The other thing is back in the mid-70s, there was a lawsuit and a hunger strike to stop the torture of black inmates in Waupun. And the politicians, Bill Proxmire, came to see the situation and so on and so forth. And just last year, there were black inmates again on a hunger strike to stop the torture of inmates.
Hmm.
And so it still persists. And with the privatization of prisons, the direction that this governor, our governor, Walker, wants to take it, it's going to get worse and worse, and the treatment of prisoners will get worse and worse as profit is the main governing goal of the investors.
And Mike,
I just want to say this because this is real important to me.
Okay.
The fact that you have this person on the radio is just outstanding, because this topic is not being covered because it's not popular. People's eyes glaze over old prisons, and the channel has changed. So the fact that you have callers is amazing. People want to know how to invest their money. They want to know how to garden. They want to know if they can hunt, and so on and so forth. And so this is very low priority. And in addition to that, the laziness attitude is one thing. But the other thing is, as you can tell by this guest, it is a very, very complicated problem. And it involves so many things. It's hard for anybody who works at least a 40-hour work week to sit down and go through this and try to understand it and then develop a sense of empathy.
Mike, thank you very much. You brought up a few things that I want to follow up with Cecilia, one of which is private prisons. We are talking about prisons in Wisconsin and whether or not we should maybe let some people out, maybe alleviate our prison population. We are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. We've got a lot of calls coming in, Cecilia, and we're going to talk about, when we come back, we're going to talk about our private prison populations and how that kind of measures up to public prisons, and we'll also talk about the stigma that Mike talked about. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We are talking about prison reform because the gubernatorial candidates are talking about prison reform. Cecilia Klingel from UW Law School is helping us out, and the phones are jammed right now. We want to get people on. Cecilia, we've got some people who have been calling in and writing in asking about private prisons. And my question is, how many private prisons do we have here in Wisconsin, and how do they compare to how many public prisons we have?
Well, that's an easy question. We don't have any. None. Between 1998 and 2005, we had a short-lived experiment where we were sending inmates to for-profit prisons out of state, mostly Tennessee, Oklahoma. But by 2005, we had brought everyone back in state. The conversation revives every few years, particularly when we talk about needing to build new prisons, either to accommodate growth or because we do have two current prisons that were built in the 1800s and that need some substantial repairs and are probably at the end of their lifespan. So the topic arises frequently, but currently we do not have any private prisons in Wisconsin.
We are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Nate from Milwaukee, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning to you. One thing I would like to say is I would definitely vote for reform, and I would definitely vote for more prisons. But the biggest, one of the biggest problems that the prison system has is the way that they conduct reform or however, it doesn't rehabilitate people, because I'm a convicted felon from 25 years ago. It was a nonviolent crime. But the problem is I did my time. I did everything I needed to do. But to this day, that felony still haunts me. There's still jobs that I can't get. There's still housing that I can't move into. I fill out certain job applications, and I put down felony from 25 years ago, and people still look at me as if I committed the crime yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost equivalent to a life sentence. So when people make a mistake, you know, which we all did when we were younger, you know, you should be able to be given a chance to live your life normally and not have to be haunted by the things that you did, especially when it's 25 years ago and a nonviolent crime.
Thank you for that, Nate. Cecilia, can he have his record expunged?
So although the Wisconsin law on expungement has recently changed in ways that I think are really positive, and I suspect more changes may be on the way that will make it even more useful to folks, expungement generally is pretty limited to people in Wisconsin. We typically have limited it to younger people and to people who've committed fairly low-level offenses. There are other ways that states have gone about trying to help folks who have criminal records get back on their feet and get past what we call the collateral consequences of criminal conviction. Lots of civil laws and private stigmas that affect people's ability to just become normal, productive citizens again. And I do hear people in our state, lawmakers and policymakers, thinking about that question, particularly when it comes to trying to help folks get employed, because we recognize that employment and housing, these are essentials to staying stable and supporting families and communities. So I suspect that we will see some forward motion in our state on that in the next few years.
We are talking about prison reform, building new prisons. As our guest, Cecilia Klingel, just pointed out, there are a couple of really crumbling prisons. So building a new prison is not really about housing more prisoners. It's about making sure that the prisoners that we have housed are safe. And in the Democratic gubernatorial candidates are advocating for letting some people out of prison. Roland from Fenimore asks, what percentage of people in prison come from poor families? Can you answer that one, Cecilia?
So I don't have the exact statistics in front of me, but I can easily and confidently say the vast majority of individuals. When we were talking earlier about Milwaukee and why do we have a disproportionate number of people from Milwaukee County in the prison system, I mean, we know that compounded social disadvantage really is linked to risk of criminal behavior. So when people have poor access to medical care and poor education and poor access to jobs and housing, life is hard, and involvement in crime occurs at a higher rate. And poverty, you know, is part of social disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
And so the vast majority of individuals who come through our courts and those who end up in prison are vastly disproportionately poor.
You know, I'm going to go back to the police thing, though, because What we learned from broken windows policing is that cops will often target neighborhoods to clamp down on them to make sure that nothing is happening. And they will arrest people for kind of petty crimes. There are other people in other neighborhoods that are wealthier, maybe whiter, that also are committing those kinds of crimes. They also might be carrying drugs. They aren't arrested because the cops just aren't targeting them. How does policing affect poor communities differently than it affects wealthier communities?
So a lot of the challenge of policing is to, you want to respond to public safety concerns, but you also have to do it in a way that is legal and feasible. And so the reality is that human beings tend to do often what is easiest. And the reality is people are committing crimes everywhere. Mm-hmm. In my neighborhood where houses are set back from the street and people have large fenced backyards, there is, I'm sure, plenty of crime going on like there is in the rest of the world. But it's a lot harder to detect. If you go into a crowded urban environment where people are living in close quarters, and neighbors can call the police if they hear a disturbance, which wouldn't happen if people's houses were separated from one another. Mm-hmm. You're going to get more calls for service. You're going to get more police response. And it becomes, in many ways, then a self-perpetuating cycle. Victims demand response from police, so police go where victims ask them to, but then when they are there, they will invariably detect the crime that they would find in any place to which they were summoned, mm-hmm. and will respond. And so it is simply a matter of capturing low-hanging fruit many times, that when officers are in a location, they will respond to crime that they find there, and they end up in poor communities more frequently than they end up in more affluent ones.
We are talking about prison reform, which has been brought up by the gubernatorial Democratic candidates. And we are taking your calls. Scott from Mauston, welcome to the program.
I was calling. I myself had been in the system for 30 years. I actually did 16 incarcerated in the prisons that you're talking about, Waupun, Green Bay. That was 22 years ago that I got out. And I listened to your previous caller who said he had the felony, 25 years ago, and it still haunts him. How we get into prison is choices, and how we become successful is choices. I've been out for 22 years. I've raised a child. I've had everything I've ever dreamed of. I've been a general manager of a major vehicle dealership for 12 years. I opened my own business the other day.
Wow.
And this is all choices. When we're in there, they don't tell us how it was that we got ourselves there. All it is how bad we were and this and that. There's no guidance. What these guys need, and I'm still in touch with a lot of them, they need guidance as to how they got there and how it was their choice. Because the biggest thing with all of us criminals is that everything is everybody else's fault. And that is not the case. Every little bit of it is our fault. And once we realize that, it's all over. There's no more trouble. There's no more any of it. And there's nobody that knows how to guide people into that, because the psychologists and the doctors and the lawyers, they've never been through it. Mm-hmm. I forced myself through it, and a lot of my friends have too. And we all come to the same conclusion.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you very much for that. Cecilia?
So, first of all, congratulations on all of your
successes. Congratulations. You just opened up a business. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And stories like yours are really encouraging and inspiring to people. I would also say that since you were in the prison system, I think there have been some changes in the kinds of programming that are offered. Not to say that we couldn't always do more on the mentoring front, and especially with transitions back to the community. But across the country and in our state, correctional programming is changing to offer more cognitive behavioral therapy programs that are actually targeted toward people's thinking patterns. Certainly, people come to prison for complicated reasons, and backgrounds and traumas do affect people's behavior, but ultimately we want people to take accountability, to accept accountability and to be autonomous, to make decisions, and to feel like they can change. And there are programs now that really focus on thinking patterns that are correlated with engaging in criminal offending and ones that aren't. And so we have a long way to go, I think, in helping people, but we've made some progress on that front.
Thank you very much. We are talking about prison reform, and we have time for a couple more calls. Jim from Greendale, welcome to the program.
Thank you for the program and inviting us. Great discussion on this. I just had a question, actually a comment. Why can't we have a prison reform system? I mean, guidance and everything is good. Fancy spending is going on. We bring in a lot of these professionals to help change their behavior, their thinking. But for repeat offenders or serious offenses, why can't we have model the same system like Saudi Arabia does, where the crime is near zero? Not only that, you take another country, Singapore, if you have, I don't know whether anybody has been there or not, there is crime also near zero. So, and if you look at their punishment style for repeat offenders or serious offenses, it is very severe. And over here, it's a turnstile. And this has been going on for the last 50 years. Unless we make real change in society, it's not going to happen. And also, a lot of the kids over here are grown up in single family environment. So that's a root cause.
Single family, like you mean not, they don't have extended family around them? Is that it?
Yeah, so it's, you know, maybe the kids are raising only with a mother or a father, or either of the parent is absent.
Okay, so Jim, I'm gonna have to cut you there. Another hit on single parents, which we will address another time. He seems to come down on the retribution side rather than the rehabilitation side. Cecilia, you have less than a minute to answer this.
I think that this is just another example of how our views on punishment are cultural, they're value-laden, and we don't all agree on the right amount of punishment or the right kind of punishment, and that's part of what makes prison reform a complicated prospect. That said, I don't think it's an impossible one.
We have been talking to UW Law School's Cecilia Klingel as in the wake of candidates, Democratic candidates, saying that we need prison reform, we need to take more people out of prison, and Republicans saying, oh, maybe we just need to build more prisons. Thank you, Cecilia, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you to all the callers. You are listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.